You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, hour number three, coming alive from our Quicken Loans studio, National Mortgage Lender. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Tiki and Tierney across the country, 3 hours every single day. CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM 206. Good job on the phone so far. First hour, we hit all the crazy storylines from yesterday. I mean, just wild finishes, upsets, reshaping of playoff pictures, and incredible performances. What a great day in the NFL.
Yeah, it was.
And we can follow this up here, Teague, bringing our buddy Charles Davis. Been a little bit, but he is a good friend of the show, and he was doing the Falcons and the Packers, so he was at Chili and Lambeau yesterday. Hey, I guess Aaron Rodgers wanted to play football again, huh, Charles, now that he got McCarthy fired, right? What's going on, man?
I don't know how you guys are doing. I don't think that's a storyline Aaron would endorse.
No. But,
they obviously got it done and got one of those games you can exhale a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a crazy week for them, which obviously started with losing at home to Arizona, which is something that should not happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the momentum was already building. And look, been a lot of discussions about whether firing Mike McCarthy is the right thing, the timing, all of that. And it's all healthy debate. Where I stand on it is, if they had made the decision they were going to fire him, if they weren't going to make the playoffs or whatever it was, and it looked pretty bleak, what must be done eventually should be done immediately.
Yeah.
And I just was not a fan of the whole idea. I am absolutely in the opposite camp of they took his dignity from him. I don't think they did. I think in a lot of ways they preserved it. Could you imagine him this week? Well, you just beat Atlanta. You have a 0.053% chance of making the playoffs. But if you don't, Mike, what about your job security?
Yeah.
All right. And imagine another 3 weeks of that.
Yeah.
I just didn't think that was good for him. It wasn't good for the organization. And last thing I'll say is that conversation he had with the team last week, the conversation where he came back and talked to the staff, he initiated both of those. He asked to be able to come back and do that through the GM, Brian Gutekunst, through interim head coach Joe Philbin. And, of course, they granted that, which was terrific. And I think it worked well for both sides,
yeah,
frankly.
No, Charles, that's kind of unprecedented. You never hear that kind of good blood between someone who's just been fired. But the question I have for you is about...
Real quick, can I ask you something real quick, though? Because you as a player sat in there for these types of, you know, whether it was an absolute fire. But here's my question. Because I've had a number of people roll up to me, like, because they heard about the talk and then heard about the team giving a standing ovation.
Yeah.
And people took that as, yeah, what else were they supposed to do? And I was like, you haven't been in the locker room? If they genuinely did not like that person.
Yeah, they would have walked out.
Help me with this.
Yeah.
Would there have been a standing up?
No, they would have walked out. They wouldn't have cared because it wouldn't have mattered because it didn't affect anything. We had a similar situation with Jim Fossil when we knew he was going to get fired. He got up in front of us and told us with 3 or 4 weeks to go, this is going to be my last season coaching. And we knew it was kind of our fault. Injuries had derailed us. And we felt bad for him because we felt like we had let him down. I think that's likely, other than Aaron Rodgers, the feeling, the sentiment. But the question I have for you, Charles, is Joe Philbin took over the play calling. And from your perspective, because one, you had a conversation with Aaron, you had a conversation with Joe Philbin, because that's what happens for those who don't know when you do these production meetings, and then you witnessed it on the field. Could you see a discernible difference in what and how the offense was being run, or was it just executed better?
No, I didn't see a discernible difference. I didn't see where in 1 week's time Joe Philbin put his stamp on the Packers offense and things were different. Go back, you know, for anyone, go back and watch the game tape and watch the ball being thrown a bunch against a defense that is susceptible to the run in a big way. Aaron Jones didn't get his first real touches until like three series in, which was surprised me. But my partner Kevin Burkhardt said, hey, maybe they wanted to use Jamal Williams if they knew they were going to throw the ball early, keep him out there for pass protection, which is a plausible deal. But I didn't see any of that. And I actually joked during the game because Joe was calling plays, Joe Philbin, And you know how everybody pulls the card up to their, you know, to their mouth to call things in.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't read lips. Joe's just calling it. He's got the card down by his waist, and he's calling them in. And guys, this is the first time he's called games, I mean called plays, in an NFL game that was regular season.
Ever.
He's done a little bit in preseason games. His last full-time play calling was at Northeastern University.
Yeah, we talked about 1996, okay. Right?
Yes. So him doing that, but here's what he told us, and I thought it was a smart play on his part. He said, "I'm taking this, and I'm going to my job is to get a play called as quickly and with as much confidence as possible, get it in, and kind of convince the team this is the right play call because I'm being decisive." And then Aaron is out there, obviously, taking in the play call. And Joe Philbin did tell us, he said, "Listen, if I get off the rails, I've got a few assistants who can help me out." And I just kind of laughed at myself, like, you don't need the assistants. Aaron will take care of that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's right. It's a non-issue. If the system goes down, Aaron's going to call the game anyway. So it's not that big of a deal in terms of that. But it, you know, it's a long-winded way of saying nothing changed on Sunday. They played better.
Okay, I'm going to go back to this. Talk to Charles Davis, Fox Sports NFL analyst, and he's with us here on Tiki and Tierney. He was at Lambeau. He had the Packers-Falcons. Got a question for you on Dan Quinn in a little bit as well. But
yeah.
And when I brought you in, I know it's kind of the low-hanging fruit, and I know that there's always nuance, and there's stories that not everybody knows. I'm not privy to everything. I get that.
Right.
So when it's positioned, you know, Rodgers got McCarthy fired, it's kind of lazy, and it's not necessarily accurate. I understand that. But he is a little diva-ish. He is incredibly sensitive. He's a little passive-aggressive. He's a little surly. Aaron Rodgers is different. And Aaron Rodgers is a little complicated. And you know, Aaron Rodgers, on some level, if he didn't grease the skids from McCarthy, he certainly didn't throw any salt down to melt the ice, right? I mean, he could have been better.
You know, he could have been a lot more public. You know,
yeah.
If he felt it, and there was a declaration, if Aaron Rodgers jumps up in front of a press conference and says, "You know, I love Mike McCarthy, he's my guy," it quells everything. He didn't do that. You know, he had his reasons for that, and I'm not here to say, like you said, we're not privy to everything behind the scenes, what's right, what's wrong, all that other stuff. But I go through time in my head, and I thought about this, and we didn't talk about it all during the game, but we've been around. And been in my lifetime, a bunch of incredibly great players that you'd better meet them at their level in terms of intelligence and IQ for their game. And if you don't, sometimes it just goes south. Mm. I don't think that was the case with Aaron and Mike McCarthy. I don't think all of a sudden Mike McCarthy couldn't think, and Aaron's like, "I can't deal with that part." I just think that sometimes, after a certain amount of time, you just don't work through your differences the way you used to.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's just my own personal opinion.
Okay.
And I look at Andy Reid in Philadelphia, and I look at a few other places. I remember Paul Westhead getting whacked by Magic Johnson.
Oh, yeah. Paul, you know? Yeah. Before Riley.
And Magic looked like the nicest guy you've ever seen in your life.
Oh, yeah.
But you mess with his basketball?
Mm.
Oh, you got a tiger on the tail.
Yeah.
So we've been through this so many different ways and times. I personally think that Aaron does respect Mike McCarthy. But I don't believe that whatever their differences were and how to go about doing things, that they just found middle ground anymore. And 13 years in,
time to move on.
It happened.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I thought you were going to make a Kyrie Irving, Ty Lue, I'd rather have Brad Stevens conversation.
No. That's a whole different deal right there.
Yeah, I hear you. Let's move over to the Atlanta Falcons because, look, we know the reason for their fall. It's the injuries. It's been devastating. But despite that, I mean, there were moments where they looked okay offensively.
Yeah.
But it can't all be explained, Matt Ryan's bad interceptions, some of these things over the last couple of weeks. It can't all be explained by injuries. What's going on there?
They can't block anyone. I mean, that offensive line, unfortunately, can't move people, can't create space in the run game. I was watching them getting ready. I was watching them against Baltimore. And you guys know Baltimore's pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
So fourth and one, they decide to go for it out near midfield. And Jim Nance does a really nice thing talking about analytics. And, the analytics people say you need to go for it more on fourth down. This is, blah, 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 blah. And Tony Romo, before the snap, says, not with this offensive line, you shouldn't. And they ran the ball and got killed and turned the ball over on down.
Yeah.
So what Tony's point is, yeah, analytics work fine if everything's equal. But they don't work fine if you've got that line and you're going to try and run the ball.
Yeah.
To me, the left tackle, Jake Matthews, the center, Alex Mack, are the only two that you're not looking to replace right now.
Oh, wow. Is Dan Quinn going to feel any heat, or is he getting a pass?
Well, Arthur Blank, the owner, came out a week ago and said that he and Thomas Dimitroff, the GM, have his full confidence and they're going to get this thing figured out. I think in a lot of cases we would roll our eyes and say, well, there's your kiss of death. The owner gave you the vote of confidence.
See ya.
But with Mr. Blank, I don't believe that at all. I think he pretty much tells you how it is from his perspective and goes on. And I even asked a couple of Falcons staffers, I said, this is going to sound crazy, but with the Atlanta United winning the MLS, will that be a problem? Because Mr. Blank owns them as well.
Yeah. I was getting ready to go there,
funny,
Charles.
On the surface, but think about it. You guys know there are some owners out there that if they had the soccer team that won, they'd be in the office of the head football coach the next day going, how come we're not winning at the same rate?
Yeah.
I don't think they're getting that from Mr. Blank. The indication was, he knows we have the problems on our side, but he's not saying, well, we did it on one side. How come you don't do it on the other? He knows that they're two different situations.
Yeah, yeah, for those who missed that, Atlanta United's an MLS team. They won the championship over the weekend as well.
Mm-hmm. And poor Mr. Blank, Saturday night, he is hoisting a trophy signifying the best of that league, right? We got a shot of him on Sunday at Lambeau sitting with Thomas Dimitroff looking out, and it almost begged one of those bubbles over his head going, was it just last night we won the whole thing in soccer? What am I watching? Because, you know, the very next day they're getting jumped on. But it's not just injuries with Atlanta. I just don't think that offensive line can help and keep you in any sort of balance running the ball.
Yeah.
You know, the run numbers have just continued to decline. They had some decent runs yesterday, the best one they've had in weeks. But overall, they've got to overhaul that part of the team. But I don't think they're very far off. I really don't. A bunch of injuries on defense killed them. And if they can get overhauled on the offensive line and go, you guys know how it is in this league.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to tell me you're going to find a lot better than Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Muhammad Sanu, Tevin Coleman, Devontae Freeman when he gets back.
Hooper.
Austin Hooper.
Yep. Yeah, Hooper's good. No, I hear you. Listen, Matt's had a good season. Matt's numbers, I know, last week or so.
At one point, they were better than his MVP year.
That's where I was going to go, Charles. You beat me to it. His numbers across the board, he's not the issue. They've got to fix a few things in the offseason. Speaking of the offseason, a final thing for me, Charles Davis with us here on Tiki and Tierney. The offseason, there's no offseason for Reggie McKenzie, at least pertaining to what he's going to do for the Raiders. He got fired today. And listen, all season long we heard that this was a marriage that was going south and you have a 10-year contract. He's got the power. We knew who was going to lose the struggle. It was going to be Reggie McKenzie. But got to be honest with you, Charles, not that John Gruden cares what we think or what I think, but the optics, you wait till you finally win a game, then you fire him. I just feel like – I'm not even saying Reggie was great, although I think he was certainly competent. I thought Reggie McKenzie deserved a little bit better from John Gruden. How about you?
Well – you know, again, without having the full understanding, I would say he deserved better from the organization. You know, look, we've been talking about this since John took the job. And you guys know, and I've told you before, and I'm going to say it again so that there's no misunderstanding. John's one of my best friends in the world, okay? So this is a difficult spot. Looking at it from him as once he went in as the head coach and got the 10-year deal, John's always been one that has been involved in personnel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember when he was in Tampa and he had to struggle with Rich McKay?
Yeah, we've talked about it, and
John won that one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's never been an idea. Like, when you hire John Gruden, you're not just hiring a football coach unless you're putting it flat out in writing, John, you only coach football and we'll handle the rest of it. And I doubt he would sign that deal. John wants to be involved in all those aspects, and he has been. So guess what? It is his. You know, if that's the case, it's his. It's his to own and it's his to fix, because you've given away some pretty good talent along the way. You've accumulated draft picks. This is better for Reggie, frankly, in a lot of ways. For me, it's like Mike McCarthy. This is going to happen.
Yeah.
pick your time on when it's going to happen. And they told Reggie he could stay throughout. And like any person, Reggie's like, why would I do that? What's going to change, right?
Yeah, so people look at me cross-eyed in the hallway.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's just like,
well, there he is.
It's like the coach, it's like
Reggie.
The coach that gets fired and stays on. Uh-huh. You know, the guys aren't going to listen to you anymore.
Nah, you're right.
So
yeah,
why
right.
do it?
It looks pretty weak. I hear you. All right, Charles.
You know, why do it? I just think Reggie's got a chance elsewhere. And remember, he stripped that team down the first time.
I know.
Got them to the playoffs. They regressed last year due to a lot of injuries. I thought they'd bounce back a lot quicker. I got fooled on that one.
Yeah. No, listen, I was out there when he was hired, when he was brought in, when Jason Campbell was his quarterback, mm-hmm. and when Hugh Jackson was coaching them, and then yep. he got rid of everybody, and he definitely stocked the cupboards, brought in some pretty good players. They had all the wins.
You remember how he started? He started doing it kind of like George Allen. See, I'm going to date myself here. Remember, the first group of guys Reggie brought in were like the over-the-hill guys.
The veterans. Justin Tuck, right? The veterans.
Yeah, he was remember?
Warm. Yeah.
And that didn't work very well.
Nah, it didn't work. The quick fix
Reggie,
rarely
like,
does.
Reggie's like, okay, yeah. draft, be judicious, and built up a pretty darn good team. And that team that got beat in the playoffs, they played with Connor Cook, who hadn't taken a snap all year because your 1 and 2 quarterbacks were out. They had no shot then. I thought they were in it for the long haul at that point. I feel bad, too. Remember, I went to school. Reggie and I were teammates at Tennessee, so this has been a tough day for me.
Yeah, I hear you.
Boy, personal angles everywhere with this Raiders situation, Charles. Jeez.
Yeah, I know. It was a tough one. John took the job. I was like, uh-oh.
I hear you. Hey, good catching up, buddy. Good job with Burkhart. We know Kevin forever, so you guys do a really good job.
Thank you. We appreciate that. He's absolutely tremendous. You guys take care of yourselves. We'll
be
talk
good,
to
Charles.
You later. Happy holiday season.
Likewise, back to man. You, Charles. There you go. Happy holidays to you. Fox Sports analyst Charles Davis. All right, T, coming up, we got to pay off this Embiid stuff. Mm. We'll do it. And by the way, I just saw a video of Boogie Cousins.
Boogie
doing some full court workouts.
Get out of here.
Boogie getting loose. How far away is Boogie? We'll tell you coming up. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
This is Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 1-855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news, quick way to save money, switch to Geico. Just go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM, 206. We'll give you a little prediction on Seattle and Minnesota tonight. Big game, important game. Should be a good game as well. Let's see here, Teak. Okay, let's get to the Embiid stuff. You ready?
Yep.
So, as I read, let's see. Joel Embiid is not thrilled with the way he's being used. Quote, as a spacer ever since the Sixers traded for Jimmy Butler. Mm-hmm. Big fella says he's been, quote, so trash in recent performances. Shooting 43% from the field. He should never shoot 43% from the field. Number one, he's too big. Number two, he's too talented to ever shoot 43% anywhere. And he's averaging 23.5 in 11 games. So the points, for the most part, are there since Butler arrived. However, he doesn't like the way he's being used, and he's basically just lingering or languishing outside the three-point stripe, and he has critiqued Brett Brown's usage so far.
Now
he's using him.
This kind of sounds like how when Chris Bosh was paired with LeBron James, and Kevin Love was the same way. You become this different player when the superior, I don't know, scorer maybe. I don't know how to position it because I'm not going to compare Jimmy Butler to LeBron James, but that this ball dominant player that becomes a part of an offense, it shifts. Unfortunately, how the big man gets used. And here's what Joel Embiid said directly. He said, I haven't been myself lately. Because mm-hmm. we know how Joel Embiid is. He's humorous. He cracks jokes. He's cynical. It's actually fun.
Quick to throw shade.
No doubt.
He's got his boy Drummond tonight. They don't like each other. They're playing each other tonight.
You're right.
Something could happen with that.
What did he say? He lives in my head? But he said...
I wouldn't doubt if it gets physical tonight with those two.
I wouldn't either because he's frustrated. Uh-huh. And Joel Embiid said it directly. He's like, look, I'm being used as a spacer, and I'm not a spacer. That's why my shooting is down. And he feels like he's not a contributor. He says my body feels great, but he just hasn't been playing well. Now the question is Brett Brown right to use him this way, or should he make Joel Embiid feel more comfortable? Because we all saw how that benefited the 76ers last season.
Well. Yes. Is Brett Brown – a couple of answers to – because there's a couple of questions. Is Brett Brown right? I believe that he is right based on the roster they have. Mm. Their point guard cannot shoot.
Yeah.
At all. So you've got to get the spacing from somewhere.
True.
It's an unconventional starting five. And unfortunately, right now, Embiid's feeling the squeeze. Now, he's got to make some more shots. He's shooting 29% from behind the arc. That's terrible.
Yeah, but
he's got too good of a shot to do that.
But can you ask him to be a primary, you know, stretch five?
No, you've got to find better balance. I'm not saying that Brett Brown's handled this perfectly, but like conceptually, I can understand what Brown's trying to create.
Yeah.
Because his point guard doesn't give him that.
Well, here's the
thing. Doesn't.
Here's the thing. So it's always about finding a rhythm. You know, we talk about, well, LeBron, what makes LeBron James so good is he creates a rhythm that helps his teammates get into the flow. And that's why historically, even though not always, he doesn't take a ton of shots in the first quarter, right? He wants to get everybody involved. But what Brett Brown has been doing is starting the games with Joel Embiid as this stretch guy. Like the first play of the game, hey, Joel, go stand on the wing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's just he never gets into a flow and he becomes an afterthought in some ways to the offense. And I think it would be better served to get him feeling like he's a contributor. So play him in the post. You know, let one of those guys try to stop him. Now, just to criticize Joel Embiid, he's got to learn some different post moves. He's got one go-to, the give and go and back and forth, and he turns around and does a turnaround jumper. It's the only one he's got. I think Brett Brown should start opposite and then space him out there.
Because, that's a good point.
Because that would make him feel like, okay, I'm here. I got a couple buckets, and now I'll work on being around the perimeter and spacing this thing out because that's how you win in the NBA.
Hey, listen, I don't think it's any different. If you're a shooter and they're just not going down, usually a trip to the free throw line or even a layup,
agreed,
an uncontested cherry pick and layup. So to your point, if you could get his mind right early, run the offense through him, you know, the high post, you know, pop him in the paint a little bit and run some action there, and then as the game progresses and as they react to that, now you want to throw him at the three-point line. Now you've got a more of a multifaceted approach. So you accomplish that, but you have him engaged.
Yeah.
And now that's where coaching comes into play. And Brett Brown talked about this, and he basically says it's on me to figure this out. I'm the head coach.
You're always mindful of that. And really, when you look at the statistics, nothing's changed. In fact, the post touches, I think, have increased, you know, since we've had Jimmy. So really nothing's changed in relation to, you know, the usage. You know, you're always trying to maximize what you got and make it work as best you can.
Now,
yeah, there you go.
Jimmy Butler, we don't know how long he's here for the 76ers. He's free, right? He could leave.
Good.
And I guess this makes
sense. He's got options.
He's got options. I guess it makes sense if you're winning.
He's got some damn good options.
He really does. He's going to have a ton of them. One could be right here. But not if this thing gets too off the rails.
I mean, right here with Philly.
Right here in Philly, yeah.
If
this thing gets too off the rails. And, like, I don't think they have a bad relationship.
It doesn't seem – well, Butler – and we're going to play it after. Certainly want you to finish your thought. But Butler did a great job of making sure he snuffed this out early.
Yeah.
Which is paramount. He took the high road as a veteran should.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I don't think they don't get along. But Joel Embiid was the scorer. Like, he was the guy.
Yeah.
Because – Ben Simmons doesn't shoot.
Mm-mm.
I mean, JJ Redick is there, obviously, but he's specialized. It was just from an ego play. This was Joel's team.
Yeah.
That changed immediately.
Yeah.
Because the scorer is Jimmy Butler. He's the one that can drop 40.
Who do you think's a better player? I think Embiid's better.
I think he is too, but because he's such a good defender also.
Well, he's got a better match. Don't you think there's more nights that Embiid has more of a matchup advantage over the guy who's guarding him compared to Jimmy Butler, the guy who's guarding him?
Absolutely.
There's your answer.
But
you got to exploit that.
I don't know. Just listening to Brett Brown, what he was talking about, it was like he was reaching for an answer instead of having a definitive plan. And without that definitive plan and clarity on roles, so not just for Jimmy Butler, but for Joel Embiid, there's no clarity.
Yeah,
it gets frustrating.
I can see that. Listen, Embiid had to work through the injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Then he had to work himself and prove he can. You know, there was an element of durability to his game. Then once that happened, then he's done that the last year or so. Even though he had a maintenance night the other night, but he's done that. He's passed that hurdle. Then he had to learn to kind of become the man. And just as he started to do that, now you have another alpha coming in. Now, so there's been a lot of evolvings of roles, if you will.
Yeah.
Now,
in
as
a short amount of time
yes.
for a young man.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And that could be a challenge. Listen, I think they'll figure this out. And we're going to play this cut from Jimmy in a second. Butler cannot have, well, I mean, I guess he can, and he probably still won't get penalized. But from a perception point of view, Jimmy Butler kind of needs this to work out.
I agree.
Can you imagine if it devolves into like a locker room issue, a real issue? And I don't think it will. But imagine if it becomes Minnesota 2.0. He had issues in Chicago, had issues in Minnesota. Now he's going to have issues in Philly?
Hey, BT.
Come on, Jimmy.
It's kind of following the same kind of pattern. It's the big man. You know, just like it was
with Wiggins. With Karl-Anthony Towns.
Yeah. It's the big man that gets.
But I don't doubt Embiid's motor.
That gets marginalized a little bit, right? It's because of Jimmy Butler. I mean, I don't know if the issue was exactly the same. I don't think Big Cat was used as a spacer like this, but he could have been. Who knows?
We got to keep an eye on this.
He lost
for sure.
his aggressiveness, that's for sure.
He did. He did.
And Joel Embiid is even admittedly saying he's lost his. So you got to keep an eye on this. This could be the Jimmy Butler effect,
wow.
which isn't a good thing.
No. And I did catch this over the weekend. SportsCenter ran the whole interview. I thought this was great. Listen to Jimmy.
People talk about it. I just scroll up and down Instagram to see it. But I know where his heart is, man. His heart's pure. He wants to win. And I can feel for him. You know, it's new to myself. It's new to him. It's new to everybody. But we're okay. I know he wants to win. He's frustrated. He wanted to play. Coach didn't let him play. We need him long term. He needed rest. He's been doing a lot on both ends of the floor for his team. So, you know, as our best player, I can understand being frustrated. He's a hell of a player.
Smart. There's a lot of cues and a lot of hints there that should probably smooth over any worry. Number one, he said he's the best player.
Yeah.
Right away, he gave it up.
Yep.
Well, actually, not right. The last thing he said, he's the best player. And right away, he said, I know what's in his heart. And I don't know if that was a little swipe at Karl-Anthony Towns. Could have been. Maybe I'm thinking about
it. Oh, it definitely was.
Yeah, I think it was, too. Because what he's saying is, no, this is not the same situation. Yeah. I know what you guys think it might be.
He's not laying down.
No, he's a type A. He's an alpha, and he's a beast.
Yeah.
And the young man that I had to deal with in Minnesota, while he is out of this world talent, he didn't quite have the same motor.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I heard from Butler.
He didn't
there.
Have the fire. The thing to keep an eye on, again, Joel Embiid on the season is averaging 19 shots the last couple games, 13.
That's a big drop.
Big
that
drop.
Is a big drop. Okay, we'll keep an eye on it. Let's get Axe update. We'll come back. We'll do the blast. We'll do a little Vikings and Seahawks for tonight. Here's the Ackman.
This is Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, we've got the blast coming up here on Tiki and Tierney. We'll give you a little prediction on the game tonight, Seattle, Minnesota. First up, though, we answer our Ask the Pros question of the day. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Let's go to Des Moines, Iowa. Bill's got us up on 1700 The Champ. What's up, Bill? What's up, Iowa? What's up, 1700 The Champ?
Des Moines.
Des Moines. Billy says, all right, guys, forget about the Hall of Fame. Was Harold Baines even a top-level player during his era?
BT's got to answer this one.
The answer is no.
I honestly don't remember seeing him. And I watched a little bit of baseball growing up, but not enough.
The answer is no. I mean, if you're talking defining his era from the early 80s up until, say, 90, like the meat of his prime, even 91, 92. He did bounce around a lot. But you got guys like Dave Winfield out in the outfield. You got Ricky Henderson in the outfield.
What about as a DH?
Close. You
yes.
keep going back to the DH.
I'm just,
of course.
Because I think it's precedent setting. That's the only reason I say it.
Yeah, I mean, of course, he's one of the best, but he's not as good as Edgar Martinez. Forget about Big Poppy.
You're right.
There's other DHs that were better than him, too.
Then that's all that matters.
You know? Think O'Reilly Auto Parts or your car care needs, guarantee low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Andre Dawson was in the outfield in the 80s. I mean, just stars everywhere. You know, and these conversations are a little frustrating because I am not in the business of trying to denigrate Harold Baines' career.
But it's almost like it was a longevity thing.
Totally.
And I mean, get that. I get this. It's
four All-Star teams? Five,
it's going to be Frank Gore. Frank Gore is a longevity thing. He was a really good player.
It's a fair comparison. That's a good comparison.
Like extraordinarily good player,
good
but he's
comparison.
Been available for years.
That's a good comparison.
And so, is he a first ballot Hall of Famer? Longevity will say yeah.
That's a good comparison.
But if you stick him versus the elite of that of his generation per year,
yeah,
he's probably not at the top.
But I would even say that Frank Gore, compared to his peers, ranks higher.
I agree.
When he was in his prime in the NFL versus Harold Baines and his peers in baseball.
There was a 6 or 7 year run there, and it was unfortunate because the 49ers sucked.
Correct. They were bad.
They were bad. But there was a 6 or 7 year run where he was unbelievable.
I hear you. I mean, Harold Baines was good. I mean, that's where the conversation ends. Couple of years, he was really good. That's definitely where the conversation ends. All right. Oh, by the way, let's get, you know what? You got a big announcement, don't you?
Yeah.
Let's get some music here. Let me lay out. Yeah. Big announcement.
Yeah, because we've been talking about this
the
for a couple
of
weeks.
The man of many interests here, without, the eclectic Tiki.
Without telling anybody, we've been talking about
we've
it.
We've danced around it.
Danced around it. But starting in January, I'll be doing a stint on Broadway.
Go to Broadway. You're not leaving the show here,
no,
are you?
I'll be doing the show on Kinky Boots.
Look at
on
this
Broadway.
Guy.
I'll be wearing the boots. I got a pair of boots that look just like that.
You're not wearing those, are you?
I have to wear them.
You have to wear those?
They look exactly
like. You have to wear those.
I have to wear those boots. So I'll be on Broadway come January. And you better come see me.
Well, listen, I know I'm getting front row seats. Jen and I will come. We'll root you on. We'll go to get a drink at to get a nice dinner. That is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Watch GMA tomorrow morning. I'll be on tomorrow morning.
Oh, you're hopping on tomorrow to let everybody know?
Yeah, to announce it.
This is a true renaissance, man.
Hey.
It's a great compliment because, you know, one of my buddies, Keith, surgeon, great guy, went to Georgetown, went to Cornell, just a great sports fan, great guy, good friend. And he saw you. The only reason I say he's a surgeon is because when he was at an event and – didn't you give a speech to some sort of medical convention somewhat recently?
It was in about a month ago. It was for the Chemotherapy Foundation Symposium.
Yes. And he couldn't make it, but he obviously got all the information. Yeah. He goes, man, your boy really is a renaissance man. He goes, he knows a lot about a lot. Yeah. So
well, that was an easy one because talking about my mom and her breast cancer survival and the fact that her oncologist and her professionals that cared for her really made a difference in her life. And that's who the room was that I was talking to. So that was a cool one.
That's awesome, man. That's I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you juggle what you juggle. Hey. I really don't know how you do it.
I'm a challenge. I want the challenge.
Can I get up there one night?
Yeah, dude.
Nah,
come on. Dude, you'll bust your ass in the food stand.
Do you have to dance?
No.
What is your role?
So I'm the antagonist.
Antagonist.
I'm Don, and I'm kind of
anti-boots?
The shoe shop turning into making kinky boots.
Gotcha.
But, you know, you got to go watch it and see what happens.
Yeah, you get to speak, too?
Of course.
Wow.
Of course.
Now, are you wearing tights? Are you wearing jeans?
I work in a shop, and so I'm making boots.
Yeah, but if you're wearing, though, you're not going to be wearing jeans. What are you going to be wearing?
Yeah, I am. No, at the end.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
You'll see.
That's incredible.
You'll see.
Good Morning America tomorrow. Yep. The official announcement, you get a little taste here on Tiki and Tyranny. Awesome. That is, you're amazing. You really are. You're
Thank
a talented
you,
dude, man. That's awesome. And we will definitely, you know, Jen and I will
be
there.
Yeah.
As will the in-laws. Because my father-in-law is dying to see that show.
Yeah.
He's dying to see
it. Won a bunch of Tonys. Cindy Lauper was involved with it.
Cindy Lauper from the 80s. Tremendous.
She's great.
All right. Let's go. You better leave me a lot of tickets.
Of course.
Then I'll scalp them.
Dude, whatever
somebody.
You need.
Take your work card. I'll take the tickets. I'll scalp them. I'll make a few bucks on the black market.
Be in the bar across the street.
Exactly.
That was the show.
Put them on StubHub.
That was the show.
All right. Let's do a little blast here. Here we go, guys.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, Tiki, here we go. LeBron James, Dwayne Wade play their final game against each other tonight. Where did LeBron and Wade rank in all-time teammate duos?
Ooh, I'm going to put him third.
Third?
Third.
That's way too high.
High?
Way too high.
Jordan Pippen.
Okay.
Magic worthy.
Okay.
Then I would say Bron Wade.
Okay.
Well, I guess maybe Kobe Shaq.
What about Kareem and Oscar Robertson? What about Stockton and Malone?
What about
Bird and McHale?
Well, Stockton and Malone didn't win one.
What? What about Magic and Kareem over Magic and Worthy? I mean, I love Wade and LeBron's the man. I don't even know if they're top 10.
Wow.
I really don't. I mean that.
Wow.
I really sincerely mean that. There's a lot. Jerry West played with great players. Bill Russell.
You're going back. Nobody. I mean, recency bias.
Okay, that's different. But you didn't say that before. You didn't say, like, post-whatever. Talking about in the history of the NBA. Did we learn anything about Lamar Jackson yesterday? Yeah, that he's solid, that he's got a slow heartbeat, and that's a tough venue. He went in there. He wasn't overwhelmed. He's not going to wow you yet. He's got to learn a lot of things throwing the football, but he gave his team a chance to win a game that they were 7.5, 7-point dogs.
Yep.
Lamar Jackson, each week you see a little more.
And they got screwed by the referees as this game was going down. There was a pass interference penalty, offensive pass interference on Michael Crabtree. They called back a promising drive. Then there was another penalty after that, so they ended up having a fourth and ridiculously long. He hurt his ankle, so he had to come out for a play. Robert Griffin came in. They easily could have won this game, and it was because of the consistency and steadiness of Lamar Jackson. He's not going to wow you, but
he's not going to wow you yet.
But he can steadily get you wins with that defense.
I hear you. They really almost took that. Raiders fire Reggie McKenzie. What GM's going to follow in John Gruden's footsteps or with his philosophy?
John Gruden will follow his own.
That's true.
It's unprecedented. There's been guys that have done this. Andy Reid actually had this power when he was with the Philadelphia Eagles. I think it actually might have to be something like that because I don't see him, meaning John Gruden, taking direction from someone else. So I think
it's going to be a unique power structure.
It really
is. Who's going to sign on for that?
Exactly.
Unless you're boys with Gruden.
Exactly.
Or you're desperate.
Exactly.
You
got to be subordinate to him,
yep.
Even though you're not.
That's right.
So
that's right. I agree. And then it goes sideways for a second, as most relationships do. Now, granted, you have a flare up, you get back on the same page. Guy's got 9 years to go after this.
Exactly.
He's going to win every power struggle.
You're right.
That's a tough one. All right. How about this? Now, Michigan has been the surprise team of the college hoop season thus far, 10-0, and number 5 in the country is John Beilein, even though D-Cell wrote Jim. Is John Beilein a top 7 coach currently in the sport? Let me answer this very quickly. John Beilein is one of the best coaches I've ever seen in the history of college basketball.
Yeah. Better than
he
Self?
He is that good.
Self?
I think he's better than Billy Self. I know he's better than Calipari. Patino is right there. He's better than Boeheim in terms of his X's and O's. Huggy's very good. I like him a lot. John Beilein is brilliant. He's a brilliant coach.
Coach K,
He's right there. Coach K's got some better players. Let's not forget about that. Jay Wright's a terrific coach
as well. Williams is there, too.
Yeah, I think John, just
Mark
coaching.
Few.
Mark Few's outstanding.
Yeah.
Mark Few's on my
shortlist.
He's
definitely top 7. Yeah, definitely.
He's one of the best.
Definitely top 7.
He's great. And he was great at Lemoyne, where he started, where his son's coaching now. Mm-hmm. He was great at Richmond, the Richmond Spiders. He was great at West Virginia with Pitt Snoggle and Mike Gansey and those boys that won. I mean, I love John Beilein. I have profound respect for his coaching acumen.
Yeah, that's quietly 10-0. You're right, D-Cell.
A little quiet. Yep. Here you go. Sunday Night Baseball now starting an hour earlier next season, just after 7 p.m. Eastern. Do we feel like baseball's beginning to listen to the feedback the fans are giving them?
Yeah, I do. And I got to tell you, baseball talk is often more, and I hate to say this, BT, it's often more interesting than the games.
Hall of Fame stuff, relocation, just pace of game.
But just like listening to, you know, how they detail the stars of the game, and this is why this guy's having this type of season. This skip is having this discussion or issue with his rotation, and this is why, you know, he's starting reliever. Like the discussion around Major League Baseball sometimes is more interesting to me than watching a game that can get boring or out of hand or whatever it may be.
I don't think you're alone in that with that position. You know, listen, baseball, you know, that's my first love. It's what I know more than anything in terms of sporting, you know, acumen or actually having done it. Whatever. I get it. Baseball is tough to watch. But I love, back to the question, for some, tough to watch. I mean, I still love it, but I get it. When people say what they say, I understand. 7 Eastern's great. Because think about it. You have people over on a Sunday barbecue. You can fire up the game. You put the game on an 8. That means the first pitch, 8:08. Mm-hmm. If it's 9:12 and it's the third inning,
I hear this is
a good move.
Yeah.
I like it.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
All right, Red Hot Seat. What do you got?
I didn't realize. You're talking about baseball, like the games, like first pitch.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about the coverage. Which is
ESPN's baseball coverage.
No, not even ESPN.
Not very
I'm talking
good.
About MLB Network.
Used to be good.
Yeah, I love watching
MLB Network.
Watching
terrific.
The MLB Network.
Yeah, that's a different watch. That's
all right,
awesome.
Go ahead to the game.
Seattle, Minnesota. Let's see. Seattle's red hot. Minnesota. I have
Minnesota has flaws, man.
By the way, the last few primetime games, your boy's been red hot.
Yep.
If you've been listening, I've won you money. Forget about our picks. I've nailed the last four primetime games. I'm going to go out of the box here. I think the Vikings play very well tonight.
Okay.
I'm going to take the Vikings. Take the Vikings to win. Take the Vikings on the money line. That's my call. That's my call.
In CenturyLink.
Yeah, it's in Seattle for sure. And I've got a lot of respect for Seattle. Russell Wilson's in the MVP. He's probably 4 or 5 for me now. Vikings win.
I got to go opposite you. Okay. I think Seattle wins this one in a tight one. Field goal at the end of the game.
Either way, I think it's going to be an awesome game.
I agree.
Hey,
and
congrats,
it's an important one.
Congrats again on AJ. And Kinky Boots, man. Good day for you. Wow.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.